Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me in the Bettors Box. It's BettingTheBook.com's MLB Betting Podcast for Thursday, April 11th. I am your host, Adam Burke. This and every edition of the Bettors Box presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the Sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Monday, Thursday format here with the Bettors Box. Coming up on Monday, we'll have another edition of the Monday Mailbag. So you can reach out to me on Twitter at Skating Tripods, or you can email me, adam@bangthebook.com. I'll answer your questions on the air. And of course, you know, if you send me something that needs more immediate attention, I can do that here as we go throughout the week. Make sure you check out my MLB betting picks and tips piece over at bangthebook.com. Off to the worst start I've ever had. So obviously it's been very tough for us with that article, but hopefully you're at least getting something out of the information that's in there. And a lot of times I think these are things that will help us as we go down the line a little bit more here. So hopefully once we get some bigger sample sizes, we'll get this thing turned around. But again, sharing information every day over in that picks and tips piece at bangthebook.com. Speaking of information over at bangthebook.com, Parker Michael's still doing his daily NHL stuff through the NHL playoffs. Great first night last night. We'll see what the three series have in store for tonight. Also, the NBA playoffs beginning here very, very soon. We'll have series previews from Admir Aljic, Jonathan Willis, and Alan Moody. They'll also be writing game previews for us throughout the NBA playoffs, so keep an eye out for that. Finally, before I start the show here today, I want to send out my appreciation and my thanks for all the positive thoughts and the feedback here. Obviously, it's been a rough start to the season for me. Seems like for a good amount of people out there, it's been a very rough start to the season. And you've had a lot of people reach out and, you know, send over some positive wishes, tell me that things are going to turn around. I certainly appreciate that. My apologies for not answering every one of you that has reached out, but know that it means a lot to me, and I'm certainly working hard to get this thing turned around for us here with the picks piece over at bangthebook.com. All right, so we dig into the bettors box here for today's show. We'll start with a look beyond the box score. Then I'll talk about some exit velocity metrics that are very interesting so far this year. We'll go down the lines, talk about some line moves that have happened since Monday. I'll give you my pick for tonight and then also a look at the weekend ahead. So we start with a look here beyond the box score. We begin with the series between the Astros and the Yankees. The Astros sweep that series from New York. But I want to start with giving some props to this Yankees offense a little bit here. They are very undermanned right now. They're missing a handful of key guys in this lineup. Aaron Hicks, Giancarlo Stanton, Didi Gregorius. Lots of guys either less than 100% or not even in the lineup right now. So credit to them for hanging tough here, because they had three very tough pitching matchups in this series. They faced Justin Verlander in the first game. Scratched out three runs against Verlander, who gave up seven hits and walked a couple guys. You know, they did a very good job hanging in there. They weren't able to get that victory, but they made Verlander work, and they had some success, just didn't get those big hits when they needed them. They had three runs on four hits and three walks against Gerrit Cole, another very tough customer. A lot of people like him to win the Cy Young here this season. And I watched a lot of yesterday's game because I had the under on that game. They had Colin McHugh on the ropes a little bit early in that one. They weren't able to punch through in the early innings. He eventually settled down, had nine strikeouts over six innings. But again, with three really tough starting pitchers, for the most part, they gave themselves a chance. That's a good sign going forward for this Yankees team, assuming that they get healthy here at some point. One of the concerning things, though, for the Yankees in this series is that their bullpen allowed 10 runs. And you wouldn't expect that from the Yankees. Chad Green got touched up. Even Adam Ottavino gave up a run. Jonathan Holder got knocked around a little bit. You wouldn't really expect that. Tommy Kahnle came in and gave up some runs yesterday. Really put that game out of reach for the most part. You wouldn't expect that from this Yankees pen. So some very weird bullpen issues so far here this season, league-wide, showing their volatility, showing the variance with the bullpen. We haven't fallen victim to too many bullpen collapses. From a side standpoint, we have had some totals issues with bullpens here with the picks so far. But, you know, again, very surprising to see the Yankees bullpen struggle as much as it did here in this series. And, you know, obviously Aroldis Chapman with the velocity decline so far this year. So the Yankees bullpen appears to have some issues right now. That's not a real good thing for them when they're dealing with so many problems on the position player side. The Astros allowed four bullpen runs in this series, all of them from Josh James in yesterday's game. threw 24 pitches, didn't record an out. Everybody else was pretty strong, and the Astros bullpen this year has been very strong. They are quite an asset for this ball club. Speaking of the Astros, though, their offense got it going here at home, 6-0 on this homestand. They had 14 walks and 34 hits against Yankees pitching in the series, knocked around James Paxton yesterday. They're definitely turning things around after the slow start to the year on that road trip that went to Texas and then also Tampa Bay. So be very curious to see what happens with the Astros here this weekend. They go up to Seattle to take on the Mariners, a series I'll talk about in a little bit here at the tail end of the show. We move over to the National League West here. The Padres take 2 out of 3 from the Giants, and 7 home runs hit at Oracle Park here in this series. The baseballs are clearly juiced. I'll talk more about that in a minute, but the strength for the Padres is this bullpen. You know, offensively, they're not really doing a whole lot so far. They've scored 46 runs, 27 of them on home runs, nothing more than a 2-run homer for the Padres, only 25th in plate appearances with a runner in scoring position. San Diego's offense really not doing a whole lot here so far, but the bullpen has been outstanding. 10 more scoreless innings in this series. And, you know, look, one of the key things for this Padres bullpen, they throw strikes. 35 of 51 pitches in game one were strikes, 39 of 62 in game two, 26 of 37 in game three, 12-2 strikeout to walk ratio in those 10 innings. You want to stay away from bullpens that walk guys. If you've got a bullpen that throws bullets, gets a lot of strikeouts, doesn't walk a lot of guys, that's the bullpen for you. If you're playing full games or looking for live betting opportunities, look for bullpens that are not going to hurt themselves with the walk. So far, the Padres have been very, very good at limiting walks from their relievers. They did it here in this series. That's one of the reasons why they were able to take 2 out of 3 from the Giants here in this one. One thing I do want to mention here real quickly, Joey Lucchese. I was on him and the Padres in the middle game of this series here, and he's tipping his pitches, it would seem. I saw this after backing him in that start. Very disappointed I didn't see it before looking at that game. But his arm slot, his release point is different with his fastball and his changeup. And maybe that contributed to last season's home run issues where he had a home run to fly ball percentage over 20%. I think hitters are picking up on this. This is something that the Padres didn't rectify from last year, something that he's still having an issue with here this season. They need those two pitches coming out of the same release point because it'll help with his tunneling. It'll help with, not giving it away to hitters, because Lucchese is a guy that doesn't have the deepest arsenal, and that changeup is his best pitch. So they need to fix this. It's a mechanical tweak that they need to make. I'll keep an eye on it. I'll see if it happens. Until it happens, I probably won't be able to back Joey Lucchese because, he's going to continue to give up those extra base hits like he did in that start there against the Giants. So something to keep an eye on there with Lucchese and see if he fixes that release point issue between his fastball and his changeup. Cardinals take the first 3 from the Dodgers here. The 4th game of that series this afternoon, that's Walker Buehler against Michael Wacha in that one. The Dodgers have stranded 23 men on base in the first 3 games. The Cardinals have only stranded 13. And sometimes that's all baseball is. Sometimes it's just a game of sequencing. And a lot of times what I try to do within my handicaps is I try to get the team that will have the most chances and hope that it works out in high leverage situations. And that's been one of my problems here this year, is that I've backed a lot of teams that just haven't gotten the job done in those run scoring situations. And it happened here in this series. We were on the Dodgers with Ross Stripling against Dakota Hudson on Tuesday night. The Dodgers had 10 base runners against Hudson in the 4 2/3 that he pitched. They did not score a single run. They had 1st and 3rd in the 1st, 1st and 2nd in the 3rd, bases loaded in the 4th, bases loaded in the 5th, didn't score a run. And that's something that's been happening to me a lot here this season. You know, I'm on an over and this happens. I'm on a side and this happens. And it's maddeningly frustrating. And yeah, it probably will even out at some point in time. But the overall theme here is that I've had some bets I, would probably not make again knowing what I know now. I've had a lot of bets that I would make again knowing what I know. And a lot of times it just has been a situation where that team hasn't capitalized on its run scoring opportunities. So If you give the Dodgers 10 runners on base in the first five innings, including so many of them in scoring position, more often than not, they're going to drive those runs in, or at least drive in some of those runs. You know, here they didn't drive in any of them. That's been a recurring theme for me. I've been, you know, on teams that do that, that don't score the runs when they get the chances. I've been against teams that are capitalizing on every effing chance that they get. That's the nature of the beast here when it comes to baseball. It's a variance-driven sport because a lot of times it comes down to these high-leverage plate appearances, both for the offensive side and for the pitching side. And a lot of those haven't worked out for me here. That's something you want to keep in mind. A lot of times teams that aren't very good offensively will struggle to drive in runs. I certainly understand that. But if you get a spot where a team goes, you know, maybe 2-for-25 with a runner in scoring position in a series, you probably want to come back on them in that next series. And we'll see if the Dodgers are that case here as they welcome the Brewers this weekend. One thing I do want to mention for the Cardinals here, though, Jack Flaherty absolutely shoved in the game yesterday in this series. A 14-2 strikeout to walk ratio after the first bad start of the year that he had. Remember, it's very important at this time of the year to use proper context when evaluating starting pitchers. One bad start is going to hurt them for several starts. One really bad start may hurt them until late May. So you want to take that into consideration here of looking at the game logs and seeing, okay, was this just a one-off thing? Has he pitched well otherwise? Because a lot of guys might have ERAs of 4 or 5 here at this time of the year, but maybe they've got 2 good starts and 1 bad start, or 3 good starts and 1 awful start. Those things will happen. And it's just like anything else. You know, if you go 2-for-25 to start the season as a hitter, everyone's like, what the hell's wrong with you? If you go 2-for-25 in June or July, nobody really notices because you've already built up that sample size. So very important to use proper context evaluating starting pitchers here and the stat lines that they have so far, because we just don't have a lot of sample size to work from at this time of the year. All right, I'll give you some general things here, not looking at any specific series, but I had a listener question about totals. And I've been kind of looking at this a little bit, and I've got a lot of stats for you here. So, again, probably best to sign up to get the notes from the Bettors Box segments, adam@bangthebook.com, how you get on the list for that. But so far, according to that Killer Sports database, again, these are from closing lines, and I believe they're graded from the closing line at 5 dimes. The over is 94, 79, and 7 so far this season. Pretty big over swing here lately. I believe it was +5 to the over last Tuesday, +5 or +7 to the over last week when I talked about this. Now, obviously, +15 to the over. We had 963 totals of 9 or higher in 2018, that came in at 53.95%. So it was profitable to the over. So far here this season, and again, it's only April 11th, 27, 9, and 4 to the over on totals of 9 or higher. Let me repeat that. On totals of 9 or higher, again, closing numbers here, 27, 9, and 4 to the over. So if a game is expected to be high scoring, it has been high scoring here so far this season. So let's talk about the reasons why. Over the first 2 weeks of baseball here this season, I'm excluding the series in Japan, the 2 games between the Athletics and the Mariners. I'm excluding those 2 games. So far in 2019, average exit velocity, 88.4 miles per hour, batted ball distance, 173 feet. Average launch angle, 12.2 degrees. The number of 100-plus mile-per-hour batted balls we've had so far, 2,055. Of the 11,922 total balls in play, 2,055 at 100-plus miles-per-hour. That's 17.2% of batted balls at 100-plus miles-per-hour here so far. The league batting average is 244. Now, when you compare that to last season, and again, adjustments were made to the baseball last season after the big home run explosion in 2017. Last year, the average exit velocity for the first 2 weeks of games, 88.2 miles per hour. Average batted ball distance, 168 feet. Average launch angle, 11.8 degrees. The number of 100-plus batted balls, 2,057, but that was out of 12,175. So 16.9% of batted balls were 100 plus miles per hour in the first 2 weeks of last year. League batting average was 238. So here, what we're looking at is a higher average exit velocity this year, a higher average batted ball distance, a higher average launch angle, a higher percentage of batted balls of 100 plus miles per hour, and a 6-point increase in league batting average. This is why the over has been profitable and why the over has been so good in totals of 9 or higher. When you get a total of 9 or higher, it's because you've got two pitch to contact guys in that game, or maybe two really good offenses or favorable wind conditions, something like that. What we're seeing here this season so far, an increase in velocity on batted balls, an increase in high velocity batted balls, and an increase in walk rate. So basically what we're getting is a perfect storm here where we've got more base runners, more high velocity contact, and we've seen a big spike in home run to fly ball percentage relative to last year. So right now it looks like the baseball is corked. There's something going on with the baseball. A lot of teams are hitting their hardest home run in the StatCast era, which dates back to 2015, or the third hardest or the fourth hardest, something like that. We're seeing a lot of high velocity contact with a lot of very positive outcomes for the hitters. So right now, betting unders is extremely difficult to do. If you're a pitch to contact pitcher, this is not helping you at all. And if you have a high walk rate, this is not really helping you at all. So what does this mean? Well, early on, you would think with the colder weather conditions that offense would be suppressed a little bit. That's not been the case relative to the last 2 years. So again, keep in mind that league-wide hitting should improve going forward. I think as it warms up, it will be even more detrimental to those pitch-to-contact guys. How fast will the books adjust? I'm not entirely sure, but we're seeing a lot of high-velocity contact here this season, a higher launch angle, further distance on the baseball, and again, it's only April 11th. We've had some very cold weather. Now things are starting to warm up a little bit. A lot of wind factors in play here with today specifically, but something is going on with the baseball where it definitely seems to be corked, packaged tighter. I don't know what it is. Maybe I know we're going to start to get some articles about this, so people much smarter than me are going to start writing about this. But again, average exit velocity up 0.2 of a mile per hour. And by the way, average exit velocity for the first 2 weeks of the season, up over a full mile per hour from 2017. And that's when we saw that big home run boost league-wide. So we could be in for a lot of offense here this summer. That's going to dictate your handicapping on totals as well as sides. And this is why I'm a little bit upset with myself for having so many plays early on in the year here, because you never know nowadays with all the adjustments they're making to the baseballs and all these different types of things, you never know how the season is going to start. And so far it's been very, very good for offense. And while that hasn't directly impacted me on all of my plays, I'm sure that there are some plays where that has definitely impacted me. I do a lot of stuff with studying the exit velocity metrics and studying pitchers that are able to limit hard contact. Well, some of those guys haven't been able to do that as well so far this season here with this corked baseball. So I've had to make some adjustments. And once again, you know, maybe some of this stuff is a little bit over your head. Maybe some of this stuff is a little bit overwhelming. But again, all I'm attempting to do and all that sabermetrics do is quantify what we're seeing. And it just looks like everything's getting hit harder. Obviously, I just mentioned that totals of 9 or higher, 27-9-4, excuse me, to the over. So we're seeing these things. Now we're quantifying the how and the why and the what. And I think that this is very important stuff to keep an eye on here early on in the baseball season, because again, you would think that exit velocities will go up as the weather warms up. Batted ball distance will go up as the weather warms up. Launch angles probably will go up as guys start to elevate the baseball a little bit more in favorable hitting conditions. So once again, this is important stuff here that will affect you from a side and total standpoint, and it will certainly have an impact on my handicapping as we go throughout the season here. Something I like to do on Thursday editions of the Bettors Box, something that maybe the sample sizes are a little bit small to start now, but never a bad idea to get some more data out there. Last year, every Thursday, really about from June on. I was looking at batting average and weighted on base average on batted balls of 95 plus miles per hour. So far this year, the league batting average on batted balls of 95 plus miles per hour, 524. The league WOBA on base average, 668. Both of those numbers are up from the full season marks from last year. Not by a substantial amount, but when we're talking about sample sizes of this magnitude, you know, batting average up, I think, a handful of points here. WOBA up about the same. Again, this is important stuff as we get into the warmer months of the season. Again, weighted on base average, keep this in mind. It's like on base percentage, except it actually assigns different values to the outcomes. So with on base percentage, a walk and a home run count the exact same. With WOBA, weighted on base average, a walk counts a little bit less than a single, which counts a little bit less than a double, which counts a little bit less than a triple, which counts less than a home run. Run values are assigned to these outcomes based on the expected number of runs and things of that sort. This does change from year to year, so it will be graded on a little bit of a different scale this season. But again, a walk should never count the same as a home run. So that's what WOBA does in terms of accounting for the different run values with those two outcomes. In any event, the top five teams in 95-plus mile-per-hour batted ball batting average are the Arizona Diamondbacks at 661, Mariners 641, Yankees 619, Nationals 596, Astros 578. Again, league average 524. So you'll have two or three outliers year in and year out that are 600, 590, something like that, or higher. A lot of times, the majority of the league, probably 22 of the 30 teams, are going to fall somewhere plus or minus 30 points of the league average. Here we've got some substantial outliers. The Diamondbacks were a very big outlier last year, up in the top five of batting average in WOBA. They also had A.J. Pollock and Paul Goldschmidt. So I would expect the Diamondbacks to probably gradually come back to the pack here as we go along, especially as they close up Chase Field as it gets warmer. The humidor has more of an impact, stuff like that. But again, the top five here with a league average of 524 are the Diamondbacks at 661, Mariners 641, Yankees 619, Nationals 596, Astros 578. Now, the bottom five in batting average here, we start with the Detroit Tigers at 393. So while the Tigers don't have a great offensive ball club by any means, they've gotten very unlucky on their high velocity contact here this season. So they are a team, I've talked about them quite a bit. They've been very dependent on the walk so far this year. They're getting unlucky on high velocity contact. So they are an offense that probably should get a little bit better. Again, here at 393 with a league average of 524. The Marlins at 425, they were in the bottom five just about all of last year. The Giants, 446. The Phillies, a little bit of a surprise, 458. And the Rockies at 465. As the Rockies play more home games, they'll have some better results with this. Right now, they have the third lowest number of batted balls of 95-plus with just 86 of them. The Indians have the lowest with 82. The Reds, the second lowest with 83. Now, again, obviously, this is kind of dependent on how good the offense actually is. You know, you're going to have teams like the Tigers and the Marlins that will probably be in the bottom five all year. You'll have teams like the Phillies and the Rockies that gradually move up the list because they're just better offensive teams. So when you look at regression from this standpoint, again, it's all about degrees of regression. If you're not a very good offensive team, but you're off to a great start like the Diamondbacks are here, you're going to come back to the pack. The Mariners, same thing. The Yankees, they'll stay one of the highest teams in this category. I don't know if they'll be, 95 points above league average, but they'll be one of the better teams in this department. The Astros should be as well. So again, not all of these teams are going to regress or positively regress to the same degree, but you can get a good idea based on the talent level that's there, how sustainable these numbers actually are. So again, league average WOBA, weighted on base average, on 95-plus mile-per-hour batted balls, 668. The top five here so far this year, Arizona at 896. Again, they will come back to the pack. Seattle, 882. Same thing, they will come back to the pack. Yankees, 796. The Cardinals, 743. And the Dodgers at 740. The bottom five here, The Tigers at 469. Again, a lot of times this is correlated to batting average as well, where teams that don't have a high batting average aren't going to have a high WOBA either. The Tigers at 469, that's 200 points below league average. That's not going to be the way that things go here all season long for the Detroit Tigers. They will at some point have some better results there on batted balls of 95 plus, because as I mentioned, you're going to have a lot of teams that, you know, sort of fall within 30 or so points of league average. And for the Tigers here, 200 points below league average. And in fact, I'm running the query here as I'm talking. I wish I would have done this for the notes before the show. Maybe I'll throw this into the notes before I send them out here. But last year in Major League Baseball, the average exit velocity, 95 plus miles per hour, sorted by WOBA, the league average was in the 630 or so range. The lowest that we had last year was San Francisco at 599. The highest that we had was the Dodgers at 723. So again, the vast majority of the league's teams will fall within to a certain range. That range is not going to include being 200 points off the pace. So the Tigers offense should have some better outcomes here on high velocity contact. So maybe look to play the Tigers against guys with bad command, guys that do allow a lot of high velocity contact. The Giants at 523, the Marlins 535, the Pirates at 564, and the Tampa Bay Rays at 583. Now, one of the reasons why the Rays are so low, despite a lot of high velocity contact, is that they hit a lot of ground balls. And WOBA, again, assigns run values to the outcomes, where a home run is usually worth about 2.08 points or so towards WOBA, whereas a ground ball single, which is what the Rays are going to hit a lot, is more like, you know, 0.8 runs or 0.9 runs, something like that. So that's wherein the difference lies from a WOBA standpoint. So the Rays may be towards the bottom in this category, largely because they hit a lot of high-velocity singles, maybe some doubles mixed in there. They don't hit for a lot of power. So that's why they're down here at the bottom of the list so far, despite having a pretty good offensive showing to this point in the season. So, again, a lot of numbers that I threw at you there. This will get stronger in your minds with the repetition that I'll have throughout the season. But, again, Adam at bangthebook.com if you want to get on the list for the notes. All right, let's go down the lines here. We'll talk about line moves dating back to when I was last on the air on Monday. We saw an initial fade of John Lester on Monday, but then that line came back up. Jameson Taillon got knocked around in the second inning, took a header, three errors from Kevin Newman. I was on Pittsburgh for the first five there in that game, and that one was in trouble from the jump. But John Lester did get hurt, which gives me all the more reason to fade John Lester when he comes back. When I see pitchers get injured in early April, they are immediately fade candidates for me. Their first three, four, and five starts coming off the DL, because now they have to go through the process all over again of building up their arm strength, building up their command, finding their grips, finding their rhythm. You go through all the stuff in spring training to build your arm up. You make a few starts, and then you get hurt, and you start from scratch again. We saw this with a guy like Robbie Ray, excellent in the second half, not so good in the first half, especially in the immediate aftermath of coming off of the injured list. I will fade John Lester without fail in his first three or four starts once he gets back off the DL. And maybe I'll look to do the same thing with Hyunjin Ryu. There was money that came in against him on Monday. Ryu re-aggravated that groin injury that he had last year. So now he'll be a guy coming off the DL here sometime soon. But an interesting line move there, because Miles Mikolas, a big ERA to xFIP guy from last season, the market came in on him, the market bringing Lester back up. Some interesting line moves here so far. The market's doing some things that I really didn't expect. And, you know, there's also a game today that I'll mention in a few minutes that, you know, I expected to see a line move on. We haven't seen it. In fact, I forgot to write about it in my picks and tips piece. So maybe a little bit of a free play here on today's show with that one as well. But, you know, not seeing the same nature of line moves I'm accustomed to seeing out there in the betting market so far. It's like clockwork. You can set your watch to this one. Money came in against Kyle Freeland on Monday. That was Julio Teheran and the Braves. Freeland did not pitch well, and he could be a guy hurt by that corked ball that I talked about just a couple of minutes ago. So money came in against the Mariners and Felix Hernandez to back the Royals and Homer Bailey, which, look, I get it. I mean, the Mariners are off to an unsustainably hot start. And as I just mentioned, they're having a lot of very fortunate outcomes on high-velocity contact. But, man, backing Homer Bailey, that's a real tough sell for me. The Mariners did wind up winning that game. Saw money come in against Ulys Chacin and the Brewers on Monday. The market is fading teams that are off to a hot start. The Brewers, the Dodgers, the Mariners, teams that are, you know, 7-1, 8-2, stuff like that. The market looking to come in against them here early on in the year. We moved to Tuesday where we saw some very heavy Reds money come in on Luis Castillo. He's been shoving so far. He's been absolutely fantastic for the Reds. If he gets any run support, and he got 14 of them on Tuesday, he'll be a very profitable guy out there in the betting markets, and the market has backed him in all three of his starts here so far. Money came in on Tuesday against Ross Stripling and the Dodgers. Again, that was to fade a team off to a hot start. Money came in on the Rays and against the White Sox in all three games of that series, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Tuesday, pretty significant line mover there. The White Sox, just not a whole lot to get excited about except for Yoan Moncada's start to the season. But the Rays took money in all three games there, did sweep that series as well. On Tuesday, money came in against Corey Kluber. That was with Jordan Zimmermann on the bump for the Tigers. Zimmermann, some nice arsenal changes, but hung a few too many sliders in that one. Kluber wasn't dominant by any means, but good enough to get by. As the Indians won that one. I had the under in that one. Didn't come through for us there, but money did come in against Corey Kluber in that matchup. Saw money come in against the Mariners again on Tuesday as well. And then a fade of Matt Harvey that backfired. That was Freddie Peralta in that one for the Brewers. Peralta got knocked around worse than Matt Harvey did on the Angels, wound up out-slugging the Brewers in that one. On Wednesday, yesterday, we saw a little bit of Nick Pivetta money come in, but he got blasted. An example of how that ERA to xFIP split is no guarantee. You still need command. He still doesn't have much of it. Nationals took full advantage there in that one. We also saw money come in on Matt Boyd and the Tigers against Trevor Bauer and the Indians. That was the correct side there. In that one, Bauer hung a couple of pitches with death by paper cuts a little bit as well. Matt Boyd pitched extremely well for the Tigers in that one. They took care of business in that game. Money's coming against the Orioles all week with the A's in town. That's not a particularly big surprise. Saw money come in against Robbie Ray to back Lance Lynn, probably fading that good offensive start for Arizona that I talked about already. One thing I do want to mention, I'm pissed at myself for not taking Houston yesterday. Took the under instead of the Astros. Colin McHugh dominates right-handed batters. The Yankees lineup, very right-handed, had a lot of success there in that one. Similar thing here in this game between Texas and Arizona. Lance Lynn is awful against left-handed batters. Simply terrible. But he's pretty damn good against righties. Diamondbacks, very right-handed heavy lineup. The Rangers win that game. I wanted to play the under in that one. I got scared off by, again, all the exit velocity stuff I've been talking about. Maybe the Rangers should have been the play there with Lance Lynn, but I'm kind of finding that I'm either talking myself off of winners or that crisis of confidence that I talked about on Monday. I got to get back to what I know works for me. And looking at some of these platoon splits, looking at some of these lineups by handedness, good angles for you to keep in mind. That was one there with Lance Lynn. And Robbie Ray was phenomenal, struck out 10 over 5. So maybe I am a little bit happy I stayed off of that game because it wound up being a bullpen battle there. But again, when you get these starters that are very good against righties or very good against lefties, and that's the kind of lineup they're going to face, more often than not, those are guys you want to look to back. And there were two examples last night with McHugh and Lynn. Both of them did wind up coming through as well. Big fade of the Angels last night. Brandon Woodruff on the bump for the Brewers against Felix Pena. Mike Trout left Tuesday's game with a groin injury. The expectation that he would be out in yesterday's game moved that line 20 to 25 cents early. When he was officially announced out, the line moved another 30 cents. Moved about 60 cents in total at some shops. And the Angels wound up winning the game anyway. So my condolences to those that got a lot of closing line value in yesterday's Brewers versus Angels game because it just didn't work out for you. So a little bit of a fade on Sonny Gray early, but then some buyback in that one. That's the Marlins on the road at the Reds. Money coming in against Jose Quintana and the Cubs here on Thursday. That's an interesting game because you got some wind factors in that one up at Wrigley Field, which is a thing that's usual here at this time of the year. So seeing money come in against Zach Godley here and the Arizona Diamondbacks. Again, maybe looking to fade that hot start. Padres sending out a rookie in Pedro Avila. Avila, one start at Double-A. Padres being very aggressive, moving guys up the chain. They've got some guys at AAA that are decent prospects. Look at Cal Quantrill, like a Logan Allen. They're going down deeper to get guys from single and double A here, like Margavicius, like Avila. Pretty interesting to see that, to say the least. But Avila gets that first start here tonight. One game I missed in my article, and I'm kind of disappointed I did. And of course, it'll probably win, so I'll be really upset that I stayed off of it. John Gray and the Rockies on the road at the Giants, taking on Jeff Samardzija. John Gray is a guy, big ERA to xFIP split. Similar thing here already this year. A lot of strikeouts, good walk rate, having problems on batted balls in play and home runs. Again, one of those ERA to xFIP guys. This line hasn't moved as of yet, at least as of putting my notes together for the show. I would expect it to. I may take a personal play on John Gray here. I will not update the article after the fact, but I may take a personal play here on John Gray and the Rockies today. But my official pick for today, a little bit juicy in the minus 130 range, the Braves, first five against the Mets. Really liked what Kevin Gausman did in his first start for the Braves here. He's throwing his four-seamer up and into righties, up and away to lefties. This is a big location change from what he was doing with the Orioles, where he was just kind of all over the map with the fastball. Now more of a concerted effort to change the eye level, go up with the heat, down with the split. I think that's a really good advantage for him. I'm thinking as I look at Kevin Gausman here for this year, maybe a little bit of an under-the-radar type of dude. You know, last year he cut down the home run to fly ball percentage, getting away from the AL East. Seems like the Braves have a better pitching plan in place for him. And look, any guy that leaves the Orioles winds up having more success than he had when he was there. I mean, Jake Arrieta, the poster child for that. So I think it helps Gausman to leave here. The Mets, lowest contact percentage in baseball so far. And also, again, like I said, all you can do is handicap the number of chances you expect to have for your team to score runs. Steven Matz walks guys. The Braves have a pretty good offense. He's a ground ball type of guy. This is a fly ball type of night because Gausman should get a little bit of a boost from a wind blowing in from left field. So I take the Braves here tonight, first five, against the New York Mets. And I've got some more detail on that play over in my article at bangthebook.com today. All right, so what am I looking at here for this weekend? Well, let's start in the National League East. We've got the Phillies taking on the Marlins. Phillies heading to a place where offense goes to die. You've got Jake Arrieta, Sandy Alcantara in the first game, Zach Eflin, Caleb Smith in the second game, Vince Velasquez, Jose Urena in the third game. Curious to see how the market handles this series. I think we probably get Marlins money in all three of these games, especially the first one here. Alcantara was very good in his most recent start. Arrieta, pitch-to-contact type of guy. I think we probably get some Marlins money in that one on Friday. We'll see how the Phillies do here offensively, see if they can keep that power stroke going down there in a very tough park for hitting home runs. Although, Marlins Park in the first homestand for Miami played much better to the power side than it usually does. So I'll be interested to watch and see if that's the case here in this one. And if it is, we'll see how quickly oddsmakers actually adjust Marlins' totals because, once again, bad offense and a decent pitching staff. The Brewers and the Dodgers, NLCS rematch here. Kind of wonder if the Brewers were looking ahead a little bit to this series, getting swept there in Angels Stadium. Corbin Burnes, Julio Urias in the first one. Zach Davies to be determined on Saturday. Ulys Chacin, Ross Stripling on Sunday. Stripling coming off of a pretty marginal start there for him. The Brewers and the Dodgers both took money against them this week. I'm curious to see what happens with this series. I think the Dodgers take money in all three games here. I really do. I think this is a tough matchup for the Brewers starters here. Burnes gets a lot of swing and miss, but then a lot of pitches that are hit hard. He's very inconsistent from pitch to pitch. Urias, obviously a lot of love for him as a prospect. The Brewers have been very good against lefties here so far this year, though, so you know, we'll see if that kind of balances out the action in that one. Tough matchup for Zach Davies, obviously. Then Ulys Chacin, tough matchup for him, too, because sometimes he has a problem with walking guys. So I think the Dodgers take money in all three games here, but obviously we'll see how this one plays out. We head out to the AL West here, the Pacific Northwest in particular, the Astros and the Mariners. Astros got right at home, hit a bunch of balls hard, had a lot of success with that. Mariners coming off of a great road trip here. Wade Miley, Wade LeBlanc on Friday, maybe the first Wade versus Wade pitching matchup I think we've seen in Major League Baseball here. Justin Verlander and Felix Hernandez on Saturday. Garrett Cole, Marco Gonzalez on Sunday. We will see Astros money in this series, probably Saturday and Sunday to be sure. I think we probably see it on Friday as well. The market has been a little bit against Wade Miley thus far, but you know, with the fate of the Mariners in progress, I think the Astros take money in all three games here. I like Miley a little bit on Friday, I think, but obviously we'll see what the price looks like on the overnights there for that one. Finally, one more serious touch on the Pirates and the Nationals here. You've got Trevor Williams and Patrick Corbin in the first game. This line will move. I guarantee you this line moves on Patrick Corbin. So keep that in mind. If the overnight price looks okay on Corbin, this one is going to go up. Chris Archer, Max Scherzer Saturday, Jameson Taillon, Anibal Sanchez on Sunday. I think these are tough matchups for the Pirates here. You know, Corbin with that wipeout slider, Max Scherzer's elite, Anibal Sanchez, very good contact management guy. Maybe an under on Sunday with Taillon looking to bounce back a little bit. His defense did not help him at all in that start against the Cubs. But the big thing I want to talk about with that series is the big line move I expect on Friday with Trevor Williams and Patrick Corbin. One other quick note, Braves and Mets play the Sunday night baseball game. The Mets had the quick turnaround Sunday to Monday. The Braves are off. So really nothing, though, coming out of Sunday night baseball from a situational standpoint, in my estimation. So, again, a lot of stuff, a lot of numbers, a lot of notes here today on the Bettors Box. Adam at bangthebook.com if you want the notes for the show. Also, Adam at bangthebook.com or at Skating Tripods if you've got questions for the upcoming Monday mailbag here after the weekend. Make sure you check out Parker Michaels' two NHL playoff previews for the East and the West. Also, keep an eye out for his daily picks and that NBA postseason content that we'll have going up over at bangthebook.com. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. I'm Adam Burke, and remember that you will never strike out when you're in the Bettors Box.